You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And welcome back. Great to have all of you here on a Friday afternoon. Welcome aboard. It's been an interesting show so far. Mark Stoops joining us a little bit later. NJG, the notorious one, joins us next.
The notorious. What's up, Paul?
Hey there.
So basically, I got home from school, right? Turn on your show, and I see this dude, this kid, Will from Louisiana, and I listen to his story. And I have to say, if there's ever been a kid in I've ever witnessed, ever seen, ever heard anything, if there's ever been a kid that I don't think anybody more resembles the kid of Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden should they have had a kid. He lies like Hillary Clinton, and he's got the competency of Joe Biden. I mean, seriously, he's an idiot. I'm sorry. At least the thing that I was joking about and lying about was a real joke. He was trying to be serious.
Yeah, I did feel like he was, and you know, I don't know who his friend is, but I have been around long enough to know that there's not a college football coach in the world, especially one at the highest level, who is going to offer a player $1 million. That's not how it works.
No. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I mean, I obviously, you know, he didn't give me any run for the money and the best kid caller in the show, but I mean, he's an idiot. I mean, he really tried to be serious. And
yeah, like, I mean, if you're going
joking,
to buy a player, you don't say in the hallway, I'm giving you $1 million. You figure out a way to wash it through a casino, through a church, through some other means, or you have a third party talk to him about an NIL deal. But coaches don't do that. There's not a coach in America who's going to be stupid enough to say to this kid who we don't even know who he is. And by the way, let's say that everything I said is incorrect. And somebody did offer the kid $1 million. And then he turns it down to go to LSU?
Yeah, because he's homegrown.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's totally how
I like the Etouffee better in South Louisiana than in Bryan, Texas. Please, give me a break. Let's check in with Trey, who is in Tuscaloosa. Hello, Trey.
Hey, my friend. Hey, Paul. Let me get this straight about that. The 16-year-old has already seen $1 million. I think that's what he said.
Yeah, he said that. I don't know about you, Trey. I'm looking for my first, and I'm sure you are too.
Yes, sir, and I'm 59 years old, Paul. Never seen $1 million. I don't even know if I've made $1 million in my entire lifetime. And then Jimbo's walking around with $1 million in a Burger King bag, handing it out like Halloween candy.
Yeah.
I mean, what's he doing? Walking up.
He went to Knoxville, down on the strip, and that's where he got $1 million, and drove to College Station.
Well, I tell you what, I thought old Cam Newton had a bag man. That's a bag man right there, Paul. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, and please, I don't want anybody to think that I was describing the Cam Newton case in the previous explanation. I didn't say a Georgia church.
Paul,
I just said a church.
Yes, sir. I knew what you meant. But, Paul, the caller talking about A&M dropped out of the bowl game from because of COVID, he made the comment they only had 46 players. Well, Paul, there's only 11 players on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
And why not give those 46 players an opportunity to show what they can do for next year, especially ones that don't play.
And why don't you admit, instead of trying to hide behind COVID, admit that your quarterback had already bailed out on you to go elsewhere? And
LSU only played with 32 players. Yeah, if I'm not correct, they showed up.
LSU was probably the diciest one on the board, and I gave them a lot of credit. I mean, they were not going to win, but they showed up because that's what you're supposed to do.
Exactly. And one other question, Paul, and I heard you made the comment yesterday that nobody has the money like Texas, and I know you meant the state of Texas, not the school of Texas. And are you talking that, and I guess, and I'm assuming, so tell me if I'm wrong, that's oil money we're talking about. If I'm not correct, where all this money's coming from?
Well, that is, Texas has a lot of money in other things, but oil would be the number one commodity, yes.
Well, I don't know if anybody's been paying attention, but because according to one person in Congress, 3 years ago, the world was going to end if we didn't get rid of all that oil with this Green New Deal. So what are they going to do when they run out of all the oil money in 7 years, Paul?
I know where a bunch of it, you can get a bunch of it based on the news these days. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Fred in Memphis. Hey, Fred.
Hey, Paul. How's it going today?
It is great. How are you doing?
Yeah. Seems like I won't use the word controversial callers, but I'll use the word controversial subjects. And I'll get back to you a little later on Jimbo Fisher. But with golf going on, I'll be switching over maybe to live from the Masters a little later on. So maybe we can talk about Tiger Woods as a golfer and as well as an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And we just finished up, I think, one of the more exciting basketball seasons, and particularly March Madness tournaments. And rather than asking you about the most outstanding teams, who would you say is the most outstanding youngest coaches that you saw in the March Madness?
Well, I think, Hubert Davis surprised me because I had minimal expectations for him. And, there's no getting around Carolina being the biggest surprise in the tournament. I didn't see that coming, and I don't think anybody else did either. So they were really fantastic. This is a team I think had lost two double-digit leads and won both. They didn't win the game. They lost the final game, but they did win the game against Baylor early on. So he would be the one I would point to. It's a pretty obvious one. Musselman is not that young, but he is probably as impressive a coach as I have seen in the NCAA tournament the last 2 years.
Well, I told you we would stay away from any controversial subjects, so I agree with you on Hubert Davis. But Hubert Davis sold me with his interviews.
Yes.
More so than his coaching on the sideline. But I believe he does have coaching skills as well as his interpersonal skills with his interviews. It was very, very good to see a young man.
He's got that infectious personality that you just you can't. I mean, Bill Self has no personality. Roy Williams really didn't have one, especially the last 10 years. He may have had one earlier on until he became this kind of a curmudgeon. But, Davis is the kind of guy you watch that game. If you're a young player, you go, I want to play for that guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not only for basketball, but for his school.
Yes, absolutely.
The way he discussed the academic segment of going to college, so we agree on that. Now, back to golf. Of course, we got the live from the Masters going on and all the hype over Tiger Woods.
Sure.
And a little discussion about Tiger. Of course, I played all team sports, took up tennis after I got out of high school, and even took up golf if I got in my late 40s. So I love all sports, and particularly I found out that the game of golf is more of a mind game than it is a physical game. And I found that out through books being read that were given to me at my retirement party in Nashville, Tennessee. When I picked up, someone gave me the book called Golf, the Mind Game. And there was no mention of the golf stroke or anything like that in this particular book. It was dealing with the mental approach to the game of golf. So that's somewhat more difficult, I would say, than a team sport. But Tiger Woods is being tested today, and we will see how he reacts to that test. I think that Tiger Woods was one of the more gifted athletes. I think he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and some people might say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, he had two parents. I had one. My dad died when I was 5 years old. I was raised on a farm until I was six before I ever knew it was anything besides a gravel road. And then later on moved into the good old town of Hopkinsville, better known as Hoptown, Kentucky, and got into team sports, particularly basketball, and was recruited both in football and basketball. But then later on I got into golf, and must say golf is a mind game.
Yeah, you know, Fred, I have quit golf, I don't know for the last time, but at least when I did play, I loved it because it really, it wasn't, I mean, you can go out there with your friends, you can go out there alone, you can go out there with your dog. And to me, the great part about golf is you are playing the golf course. You're not playing anybody else. And it is an incredibly mental sport. And I think it's maybe the most intriguing mental sport there is, because your temperament is going to control. I'll never forget something Jack Nicklaus said. I once heard him speak, and he said the most important shot in golf isn't the great shot. It's how do you follow up the terrible shot? And as someone who has hit more terrible shots than anyone I know, I think I could write that book. Let's take a break. More to come. We will talk to David Ubben about NIL and what it means to so many people right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
David joins us now. David, thank you. Let's talk about these collectibles. First of all, and I hate to make you into a kindergarten teacher here, but for those who have missed the previous times we've discussed it, what exactly are they?
Well, their name, because they're a collective of fans who sort of pool their money together and then find ways to get it in the hands of athletes, which is legal for the first time pretty much ever as of last July. You know, for the first few months, a lot of that was focused on players on campus, and in a lot of places, they still are focused on places on campus. But right now, those collectives, you know, this is a major tool in recruiting. It's a big deal when people are deciding where they want to go, and the collectives, you know, sort of do their best to make sure that players know if they come on a campus, hey, this is the kind of money that's awaiting you.
So now that we know what they are, how are they being used, and are they sustainable?
Well, they're still figuring things out as they go. You know, the ones that are making the most impact are the ones that are the most well-funded. How well can you bring in donations? Sometimes that's diverting funds that might have otherwise gone to the athletic department. Sometimes that's courting major donors to say, hey, we want to give money in addition to what we give the athletic department. And then for some of these collectives, the Gator Collective at Florida, Aspire Sports at Tennessee as well, you know, they are courting the small-time donors. Hey, you can give $20 a month. You can give $10 a month, whether that's $100 a month, $200 a month, $1,000 a month. People that aren't going to get their names on any buildings anytime soon, but you start adding all that up, you know, 50,000 people giving $20 a month. I should have known better than to convince myself to do math on live TV, Paul, but I think that's $1 million. And there's a lot of people, I think, a lot of programs, especially in the SEC, where getting 50,000 people to give $20 a month, that takes time, but it's definitely possible.
And I bring this up because we had Jimbo Fisher on yesterday, and you know the heat he's taking. And what's that?
He wants to pretend like it's not sort of affecting where guys are going or impacting guys' decisions. He's welcome to his opinion, but you talk to enough people, that is just not the case. These collectives and the NIL money that's flowing to guys that aren't even on college campuses yet, this is making very real impact on recruiting decisions. I really do think this is the most important thing in college football right now. And the people that take advantage of these next 2 to 3 years when everyone's sort of building up their war chest are going to be the places that have a chance to really see some upward mobility.
David, based on what you've heard, what did A&M do in this most recent cycle that helped them so much that others apparently were either unaware of or unable to do?
Well, I mean, you know, it's sort of hard to say because A&M doesn't have a public collective. You look at Florida, you look at Tennessee, I think Georgia has theirs as well. There's a website you can go to and say, I'm a Tennessee fan, I'm a Florida fan, I'm a Georgia fan, and I can go donate here. A&M doesn't have a sort of public front-facing collective. And you talk to enough people, certainly, you know, a lot of the guys that signed in that number one class are getting good NIL money, good NIL deals that are going to really impact their lives. It was certainly something that helped, and I don't think that that's anything that's insulting to A&M. I think, you know, there's been a few times where Jimbo says, well, to insinuate that these guys were, influenced at all by any of this is sort of insulting and all these. I really don't think so. I think it's a testament to the infrastructure and the passion that's built around Texas A&M football for them to be able to mobilize so quickly and go from having a pretty good recruiting class to the number one recruiting class in the country, one of the best recruiting classes we've ever seen. 8 5-stars in one class, Paul. I mean, they're doing what Alabama and Georgia do and don't always do every year. That's a huge deal. And, you know, to suggest that money played a role in that, I think is, again, a testament to what A&M is doing and how badly A&M wants to climb that ladder.
And do you think it's a matter of them just being first to figure it out? Because now everyone has had some time to digest and go with these either public collectives or whatever. Because it did seem like they had something figured out that nobody else really understood.
Well, you know, oil money's nice. that helps. you know, Texas has, I think Texas has 4 front-facing collectives, some with baseball, some that do focus on sort of charity work, and you have like the, you know, $50,000, you know, baseline for your linemen and some other positions and that kind of thing. Texas A&M doesn't have that public aspect. It'll be interesting to see what this evolves and what this becomes in the years to come. But, you know, ultimately it's having money, mobilizing money and figuring that out, and exactly how that works right now is sort of unclear because it's not really clear how A&M is operating. You know, I've written about Tennessee's collective, and I've talked to people at Florida and Georgia. I kind of have a good idea of how they operate. At Texas A&M, it's a much quieter operation, so exactly what happened and how is sort of hard to nail down at this moment. But I think as time goes and this becomes more and more commonplace, and it's kind of odd right now because there's sort of a hush-hush element to all this, and I think some of that leads to a lot of casual fans, Paul. I'm not sure they understand the impact that collectives are having and the importance that these are going to have in recruiting moving forward. I think this is going to be right alongside, you know, your facilities, your coaching staff, your scheme, as something that's really, really, really important in college recruiting. And, you know, for some guys, it's going to be the most important thing. I think anytime you make a job decision, Paul, I make a job decision, anybody, compensation is a huge part of it. If somebody's going to be able to offer you 40% more, why would you not go there? And I think that's a testament to wherever you're going to be able to have that infrastructure and do that.
So based on the reporting that you've done and the people with whom you've spoken, I know you can't just put a composite out there for us, but how does this work in a recruitment, either on the front end or in the portal?
Well, I've talked to some people in collectives, and generally it seems like it's the first thing or the last thing that people tend to bring up. But it's always usually brought up because you don't want to miss your opportunity. You know, the 2022 class, the guys that committed early, this obviously wasn't legal yet. They didn't really know what was going on. Late in the 2022 class, we saw this. This was a huge impact. This had a major influence on where guys went as they sort of figured out the market. But not everybody kind of knew about it. Right now, 2023, the story's out there. I mean, Paul, obviously we wrote about the $8 million man who's getting paid $2 million a year, a five-star recruit. People know that. If you're a five-star, you're probably looking for similar money. So these conversations are happening, and what schools can mobilize and figure out, okay, we can make this happen, we can do this, are the ones that are going to do pretty well in 2023 recruiting. And I think, you know, outside of the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Ohio States, although we'll see what Ohio State does, I think you're going to see that top 15 is probably going to look a little different this year, and I think it's going to reflect who figured out the collective game the quickest.
On these big-ticket players, are there any provisos in there that if we have an incident like with Ewers from Texas to Ohio State back to Texas, that the deal is negated?
Well, there's certain things in all these contracts that say, hey, you know, we want you to stay here, but you can't lock guys in. I think for one, you know, if there's anything that says in that contract that says you have to be enrolled and playing football at this school, that's illegal. They can't be, you know, these collectives are operating with the interest of the schools in mind, but they can't be operating and saying, well, we have this money, but if you leave this team, you're not getting this money. Now, if they leave the team, they might not get it, but you can't have that in writing. Sometimes it's, well, you're not gonna be able to fulfill the requirements of the contract. It gets a little bit weird on that front. But ultimately, you know, if you're paying a guy a lot of money from a collective, you know, if he doesn't do well and is looking elsewhere, it's unlikely that somebody else is going to pay him that much more money. If he's not doing well, he's certainly incentivized to stay and say, well, I'm making this money, I might as well try to work it here because my career hasn't maybe gone on the field like I thought it would. And if I leave now, I'm saying bye to a whole lot of money. And I think this is something that can slow down some of the crazy roster movement that we've seen in the last year in college sports that every coach really hates right now. And so, you know, we'll see how these things play out. I mean, again, this is such a new frontier. What happens when the head coach is on the hot seat? We haven't really seen that. And how does that interact with the collective? What happens, like you said, when you have a Quinn Ewers situation? We can assume what's going to happen and read the contracts and say, well, this is what we think it's going to look like, but we haven't seen it yet. This is all so new. Again, we've seen how big an influence this is, but this is still 9 months old. I mean, and probably only, what, 4 or 5 months where it's been a real major recruiting tool. So this is going to be a really fascinating thing to watch in the next couple of years in college football and college sports on the whole.
Fantastic conversation with David Ubben of The Athletic on the topic of the day and the future of college athletics. We'll take a break. More to come. More, including a conversation with Mark Stoops of Kentucky next hour.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And back on a Friday afternoon, Augie is up next.
Roll Tide, roll, Paul Feinbaum. Paul, you just had a clip of Nick Saban. Has he taken a sip out of that Coke in the last 2 years?
No.
It looks like it's at the same level it was 2 years ago.
I believe it's Dasani.
Is he drinking,
Augie? Oh, I forgot. There is a Coke on the left side. I didn't see that.
Yeah. Yeah, on Saban's right, there's a Coke and there's Dasani water. But it looks like that Coke hasn't been touched in like 2 years. You think it's still got its fizz?
I think Coke retains fizz up to 6 months.
I think Coke retains fizz after the post-apocalypse. But, Paul, you were a little rough with Matt today.
Well, I'm trying. It's tough love, Augie. That's what's going to happen here.
You know, Pat, I think Pat does too, but Matt really looks up to you. And, you know, he says you're like his big brother, so... I'm not sure if that's doing his self-confidence any good, Paul. You're really being tough on the Beaver. So I hope Matt's not scarred by that. But it doesn't seem like it affects him because he comes back the next call with the same vigor on the same point and he doesn't change it. So good for Matt for sticking to his guns.
Well, I think that's important. I'm trying to help Matt become a championship caller.
Oh, I think Matt's on the way. He just needs to... he needs to vary his repertoire because it's kind of the same thing over and over.
Yeah, you're right.
But
and,
it's better.
It's great when that one in 10 years when A&M has that big season, but the other nine, it's pretty weak.
But he gets pretty fired up when he gets into these phoner feuds, and he's on fire when he gets into
the gym. Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of Jim, I haven't heard from Jim lately. And,
no, he's
you know, Jim was on a roll.
He was having such a good spring, too. And
yeah. I think he was going to be
You probably have never heard this before, but he got injured that time, and he could be having reoccurring nightmares from that pool injury in 19-whatever.
Well, you know, I was watching this. You got another commercial with Marty McGee in the Academy store. Did you see that one where Marty tells us, yeah, I played baseball even through college? And I'm like, oh, boy, here we go. Another guy who was a great baseball player, although he's doing TV now. So I'm like, is there a little of that in Marty, too? But can't make that call yet. But Paul, NIL, you've talked to a lot of people, you've talked to experts, you've kind of given your opinion, but you're like Mr. SEC. No offense to Tony Barnhart, but I think you are Mr. College Football.
No, I refuse to accept that.
Okay, if I were you, I would too, because Tony is Mr. College Football.
Tony is one of my all-time heroes, and as long as Tony has a breath left, he is Mr. College Football.
He is. So, NIL. Is NIL and the transfer portal, because I see them as kind of one and the same. Do you?
Well, they are different because NIL affects recruiting on the front end specifically. Let me back up. It affects both recruiting on the front end and the transfer portal.
It affects retention.
Let's
face it. If you're an all-star at Louisiana Lafayette and you were one of these guys who the big schools just blew on the scholarship offer and you're setting all kind of Southland Conference records, don't you think somebody from LSU or – Houston or Alabama are going to tell this guy, look, you sign with us, look at the opportunities available to you in this price range, $2 to $3 million. It affects retention. It's not just on recruitment, it's retention too. But this whole NIL transfer portal, my opinion is it's changing the nature of college football as we know it, and it will never be the same. What do you think?
Well, I think that is obvious, and that's why you're hearing so much criticism from the old guard, and you're hearing it privately from some of the you're hearing it from all the coaches privately, except Jimbo Fisher, and some of them publicly. Now, the one thing I don't know, Augie, and I asked Ubben this a few minutes ago, what exactly is A&M supposed to have done to have enabled them so much?
I don't think, because we don't even know what the boundaries are in this game.
No.
Oh, you're out of bounds. Well, where's the boundary marker? Well, we're not sure, but it should be over there. Well, should be and is two different things. But here's a conspiracy theory thought for you, Paul. You know, we're in a new age, a new generation, a new political thought. Bring down the old thinking, up with the new thinking. College football, especially in the South, is like one of the longest, oldest traditions.
And because of what Congress is doing, what the courts are doing, do you see this as a political aim to destroy what is and was what we had considered the last unadulterated bastion of tradition?
I do not believe it's going to destroy it for this reason. Ultimately, I don't think the fans care about any of this stuff. And I know that fans say, well, I'll never watch this or I'll never watch that. But I remember 1994, Augie, everyone said they'd never watch baseball again after the strike. They did, maybe not to the degree that our forefathers did, because it's become mostly an unwatchable game. But the fans go to the games because they have a good time, they're with their friends, and they have a specific team to cheer for and one to cheer against. I don't think they really care what the players get, because this has not exactly been pure amateur football for a long time.
It hasn't been. There have been attempts to rein it in. It's like a herd of horses. I mean, a couple will go astray, but now the whole thing has gone astray. There are no outriders to keep them in line. They're just all over the place. And I don't see what they're going to do to rein it in that's not going to violate the intent of what Congress and eventually the courts are going to impose, because it looks like players now own the shots. They call the shots. They dictate the shots.
And I think there's a better chance of players being unionized than there is of them reining it in, which I don't think that's going to happen either. I am going to be tuned in to the opening weekend of the college football season as much today as I was 10 years ago, whether my quarterback is making $1 million or he's making nothing. That stuff doesn't bother me. I'm still going to watch the game. People are still going to cheer. They're going to bet. They're going to do whatever they feel like doing. Let's continue. Bubba is in North Carolina. Hello, Bubba.
I feel just like you, Paul. I'm going to be in Neyland Stadium screaming my brains out 10 years from now, no matter who's getting paid what.
Go, Bub, go.
Yeah, I agree. We heard this 25 years ago when coaches started making $1 million a year. I can't believe that. When I was in college in the 30s.
They're always driving this narrative.
Nobody. People are not. I mean, this is not Harvard and Yale where we put the GP. Well, they do put the GPAs on the screen, but that's just for show. I mean, when you go to a game, and your quarterback is running for his life, and he throws a short pass, and the guy catches it, and he's heading for the end zone. How many times are in section GG or wherever you're sitting? Do you say to yourself, I wonder if he did his lab this week in chemistry.
Exactly. If Tennessee beat Alabama this year, do you think anybody's going to care who got paid at what position?
Not at all.
No, they're going to lose their mind and tear the stadium down.
Now, Bubba, let's be assured. There comes points in time when we're guilty of it, and others we'll put a player's name on the screen and go, he's a fine young man. He's majoring in basket weaving and finished first in his class. But fans really don't care. I don't think they care about anything. We've had fans call in even during your investigation, go, if we did something wrong, we need to take our medicine. Nobody believes that.
No, all I care about is the football.
Yeah.
The integrity of the game, the tradition matters to me.
Well, and the tradition's not going to go away.
I don't want NIL to sacrifice our traditions as fans. I don't want them to interfere with that.
Hey, you remember, Bubba, back 20 years ago, don't you, when Alabama and Tennessee were feuding in football? Do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely.
These two guys, and I knew them both, and I've been together with both of them, Logan Young for Alabama and Roy Adams. And I was friends with both of them, so I feel comfortable in saying what I'm about to say. They would go out to dinner in Memphis, where they were from, and argue with each other about which player they were going to outbuy each other for.
Absolutely, Paul. Let me tell you something.
They took pride in that. And Alabama won every battle, by the way.
Philip Fulmer used to roll out some of the biggest strongest football players onto that field, and they did not come just because they wanted to play at Tennessee. They had a massive football team. I mean, it looked like an NFL team came out on the field.
I've been, Bubba, I've been to small towns and you know, at these quarterback clubs, and I've had people say that, and I, you know, some of the language made me uncomfortable, but hey, that guy's mine. I bought him, and this guy bought that guy. This is 30, 40 years ago, longer than that, that this has been going on, much longer than that. Every small town in Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Louisiana, that's where the pride is built on those local clubs, that we need to get together, make money, so we can make sure our guys stay in state. Now, that's all over with now because of you got so much bigger money at stake. We need to take a break. Mark Stoops joining us. We will not ask him any of these questions. We'll ask him how his football team looks.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We welcome you back, and let's continue here. Sutton is up next in College Station. Good afternoon.
Howdy, Paul.
Howdy.
You're doing well today.
Thank you.
I wanted to call you. You got my blood boiling on your last so-called reporter from The Athletic. I believe his name is Mr. Oven.
Yes.
He had nothing hot in the oven. It was ice cold, because this whole narrative of people that are trying to sell clicks, that Jimbo is cheating through NIL, is just wrong. And he even said he didn't. He thought that the A&M collective was undercover. It was not out in the open. So if anybody wants to go to TextAgs.com, you know Billy Lucci very well, and the
of course
team at TextAgs. You go to Stacked. It's right there. I am a contributor to Stacked, and let me tell you what it does, and because I think it's important for people to understand how NIL works and these collectives work. I give $100 a month over and above my TextAgs membership, and I have access to interviews by players. So this week, we got Haynes King, and we also got Devonta Achane, two guys that I have never heard interviewed. And we got a chance to hear those guys, their story, their background, how Achane is doing on the track this right now. And so it's a collective, and the guy from The Athletic said, oh, you know, it's all oil money. Okay, I've never done a day in the oil fields. I'm not a rich guy. I actually save to be able to give to support my school. And I think the biggest narrative that people are missing about the Aggies is the Aggies haven't been relevant ever. My grandfather played football for Texas A&M in 1928. We were relevant in 39. For the first time ever, we're nationally relevant. And you have people like myself, class of 93, that are willing to give money to support this program because it's a
so,
very
so Sutton,
first
let me,
time
let me,
ever.
Let me stop you for a second. So essentially, in the TextAgs collective, your residual is information, and those players are being given some sort of compensation to do the interviews. Am I hearing this correctly?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So they're taking.
But we're not talking high dollar amounts here, though, are we?
No. We're talking the maximum somebody can give in Stacked is $100 a month.
Okay.
And so right now, Stacked is $350,000 a year. Okay, so that's not big, big money.
Because as I've heard it now, A&M may be different, but most schools, the percentage of players making anything is about a quarter of the players. Now, A&M may be different, but we're not talking about widespread. So I appreciate you telling me that. I'm still trying to figure out where this mushroom cloud emanated from that suggests that they're buying players with oil money.
No, but hear me. I'm not a big oil guy, okay?
Right, I got it.
$100 a month.
Sure.
But hear me. There are people that are just as passionate as me, class of 93, that are in the oil business, or they are in real estate, or there are, and they've made more money. So they're not giving $100. They're in other collectives giving more money.
And how is that? Great. So, okay, let's say the richest guy, the richest Aggie in the world wants to help the program. How does he do it, and how does that money get dispersed?
Well, and that's the key. I'm not in that group.
Well, no, you've established that several times. You're a former student. You know how the game's played out there.
And there are many different collectives that have gone together to do different things. Like this weekend, we have during the spring game on Saturday and on Sunday, we've got players that are going to sell their merchandise at the warehouse. I'm going to take my son. We're going to buy a whole bunch of stuff. They're going to get signed. The Aggie Nation has embraced NIL. And they're trying, and us as Aggies.
Yeah, but Sutton, if I could add this, I appreciate that, and that's great. But you didn't tell me what some of these players are making off the oil baron.
I have no idea because I'm not an oil baron.
Well, no, you've said something that concerns me. I'm not trying to be a lawyer here, but I think he said at least five different times, I'm not an oil guy. But are there oil guys? He said yes, but he's not one. So he's giving $100 so players can make a little bit of spending money. What about, I guess we could ask the next coach. Mark Stoops joins us.